These are challenging times, but you don't have to navigate them alone. Welcome to How Can I Help? I'm Dr. Gail Saltz. I'm a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, a psychoanalyst, and best-selling author. And I'm here every week to answer your most pressing questions, hopefully with understanding, insight, and advice. Today, we're going to tackle some questions that are about sex, and I thought it would be really helpful to have a guest with me today who is a very well-known sex therapist, and I thought it would add a lot of dimension to the information. My guest today is Ian Kerner, a psychotherapist and nationally recognized sexuality counselor who specializes in sex therapy and couples therapy. He's the author of the huge bestseller, She Comes First, The Thinking Man's Guide to Pleasuring a Woman. And now he has a new book out. So tell me about the last time you had sex, laying bare and learning to repair our love lives. Ian, I am super excited to have you here because, well, we've done a number of things in the past together about relationships and sexual issues, and you're the man, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, when it comes to sex therapists and communicating this kind of information to people, which can be hard for people to even ask about, let alone really engage in a conversation about. So we did get some questions today, which I definitely want to hit, that are about the sexual part of relationships. And I'm glad that people can ask anonymously here. So people do feel comfortable writing in with their questions about sexual issues. I have definitely been hearing from people that in this lockdown situation, their high irritability, they're being very, very stressed and highly irritable. And often, yes, being locked down with their children all the time, which is, you know, very, very stressful, was making it, you know, was basically crushing their libido, that they just felt so grouchy and so stressed out and so anxious so much of the time that the idea of getting in the mood or being approached was really being squashed, which then in turn scared them because they're with their partner and this is the person that actually they kind of want to turn to for comfort, but they had these, let's say, ambivalent feelings. On the one hand, I want you to comfort me. On the other hand, like, don't talk to me about sexy time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's been so much irritability and just anger and defensive emotions, and that really gets in the way of kind of the vulnerability of sex. You know, I think the ironic or sad thing about all of this is that sex can be such a boost of positivity to a relationship and could really help alleviate so much of that stress and anger and frustration. I mean, sex really, studies have shown that couples who even have healthy sex once a week have much higher levels of relationship positivity than couples who don't. And it's not about 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week, you know? So I've really been focused lately as we're coming in COVID, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, sort of on new rituals. And I think setting up like a ritual around sex is really important because we need that positivity.
So I'm going to ask you about give me an example of a ritual. But before we do that, dating during this pandemic time and being intimate with new people has been particularly challenging. Really hearing from 20-somethings and 30-somethings who have been, you know, fearful of being with a new person, right? And contagion, understandably. So now, of course, people are getting vaccinated, but still half the population is not vaccinated. Do you have thoughts for people who are single? Have you been seeing single people and they want to find a new partner in terms of intimacy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't work as much with singles anymore as I used to, Gail, but I do know from, you know, a lot of my single patients who I was seeing, some of who were having sexual problems at the time or dating problems. I know that for a lot of them, their dating lives just completely shut down, like just, you know, went into suspended animation, especially for people who are on the extremely cautious side of things. And so, you know, some people were able to do Zoom dates and things like that. Some people actually did get inventive and creative and they would go on dates, but they'd sort of be walks or side-by-side dates, or they'd actually find that there was a lot of eroticism from not jumping into bed and not having sex. You know, I think a lot of young people today, especially with the apps, are sort of sex is available and there's some pressure to have sex. So in some ways, it did allow them to appreciate other aspects of eroticism. So I just hope that continues. You know, I think that this is a great time to be cautious, but I don't think you have to be overly cautious. You don't want to take risks, you know. So I think it's a great time to start getting out there again and start getting into the dating habits, but maybe be more mindful, maybe be more appreciative of everything that you've learned in this time and, find new ways of connecting or appreciate new ways of connecting.
So let's get to it and see, how can we help? Dear Dr. Saltz, I know it's not very feminist of me, but I often find myself faking orgasms. Sometimes it just feels easier than trying to walk my partner through my own needs. Do you have any advice for how to ask for what I want? Why do I feel the need to fake an orgasm if I don't finish?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question first. Like, you know, why do women, fake orgasms, although men do, but not nearly to the same extent? Of course, you could say, I don't want to hurt his feelings, or I'm not enjoying this and I want to bring it to an end. I often find, though, that there's another layer that doesn't get talked about as much, as which is, if I'm not having an orgasm, then maybe I'm broken, or maybe something's wrong with me, and I don't want to share or make myself vulnerable, you know? And so I think that there's a real conversation and there's a real vulnerability there. And I'm a little bummed that this person doesn't want to really teach their partner or talk about this to their partner, because, you know, sex is like a dance, and most of us don't arrive knowing the steps and how to do it. Dance, you know, I think it's this idea that everything should just be natural, and spontaneous. And it's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is because not only do I want people to rewrite their own sex scripts, I want them to challenge the larger cultural scripts around sex that they've internalized. I always have to have an orgasm, you know, from intercourse, right? Or sex should just be spontaneous, you know? I want to challenge all of those notions. So I hope that this person will have a conversation, you know, with their partner, and will not feel broken, but can come from it from a place of strength and wanting to make sex better, and take the time, if they really care about each other, to invest in learning how to dance with each other.
So if she has been faking it, how does she go back in and say, oh, hey, actually, faster, slower, to the right, to the left, that's not working for me. I can't do it with intercourse. I need this. I need you to go down on me. How does she have that? I mean, because she's got to kind of back up now,
right?
From something that's been. How would you suggest to do that?
Right. Well, first of all, what I would say is, even without faking it, people's sexuality changes over the life cycle. And who says that what worked yesterday absolutely has to work today? Or who says that, you know, maybe yesterday there were less stressors and today there are new stressors, and so we need to do this, in a different way. The thing that I would also say, going back to fantasy again, is, clearly this person doesn't want to teach their partners or has identified a problem. Well, let's identify the solution. What is the solution to this person not faking it? I really don't know much about them. Is it getting more stimulation? Is it reducing stress? Is it something that their partner's rough or something? I don't know what the problem is, but what is the solution to it? Let's just say the solution is way more foreplay. Okay, so now you're not criticizing with a problem. You're talking about a solution, and why not sex it up? Again, why not say, you know, I really had this terrific hot daydream, and we were kissing again, you know, and I was remembering, like, how hot it was in the beginning when we were just kissing, and I kind of missed that, right? Like, and you might start to get what you're missing.
So it's really about, again, suggesting things that do turn you on and sharing that with your partner as a bonus for them. What you can hear in the thread of questions is people being afraid, understandably, of criticizing their partner and losing them in that sense. But if you're basically suggested bringing them with you by saying, hey, this turns me on and I want to do it with you.
Right. You know, it's funny, like people are, they're so shy about talking, and yet they will have arguments and talk and put their needs out there in every other aspect of life. Where are we going to live? What are we going to do this weekend? Let's roll over. Let's get into the boxing ring and fight this out. But when it comes to sex, all of a sudden, you know, we don't want to bruise each other's feelings. And, you know, it says a lot about how we live in a culture where we don't, you know, learn how to talk about sex. But I would say, like, you need a little bit of a thicker skin. You need a little bit of a resilience. You need to be able to go in there and talk about, and still in a loving, proactive, supportive way about what you need out of the relationship, and sex is worth it.
For this woman who's having difficulty reaching orgasm during whatever it is, foreplay or during intercourse, you know, you also, I mean, I hear from a lot of women who really don't like the idea of being very directive, verbally directive. They find that it's sort of, it messes with their arousal for them. But one can be physically directive. One can just move someone's head around or hand around or, you know, pace them or whatever. And you can show your partner what you need or what is necessary for you.
Yeah, it's true. We don't want to give instructions during sex because it really takes us out of the moment. It's not that the instructions are bad. It's that they just don't allow us to, like, you know, relax and get absorbed. So part of the trick of good sex is guiding each other and staying in the flow of pleasure. It's like if I'm driving and there's a detour or there's like a roadblock, I'm not going to abandon the trip. I may slow down. I may stop or take a left or look around, but I'm staying in the flow of the trip, you know? So you got to work on staying in the flow of pleasure. And I think a little physical direction is great. And I hear from men, if you ask any guy at least, would you rather like get honest feedback or not? They're going to say yes, right? They really are going to say yes. So your partner.
I think that's good for women to hear. They're going to say yes. I think a lot of women aren't sure they're going to say yes, that they're going to be like, oh, you're micromanaging me or, you know, and so I think women do need to know that most men, a lot of men would be happy to hear direction.
Right. Given the choice of having a partner who's faking it and not enjoying sex and not going on that pleasure cruise together versus getting some honest feedback about how to do it. Yeah.
How can I help with Dr. Gail Saltz? We'll be back after this short break. Dear Dr. Saltz, I watch porn on occasion. I found myself in a new relationship and I have not stopped doing so, but I am beginning to wonder if it is something I should talk to my partner about. Is porn cheating? Should I bring up my habits with my partner?
Yeah, I would say what this question suggests is, do you bring something up? And in this case, if this person isn't bringing it up, they're kind of keeping it a secret. And I'm just not into secrets. I'm all about privacy. This person can have a ton of privacy around their porn use and masturbation. But I think once you make it a secret, you're just amplifying the explosiveness of the issue. And there have been studies that have shown that couples who talk about porn, couples who even watch it together, they have much, much higher levels of satisfaction and lower levels of distress. So I think it would be a great conversation. I don't think you have to hide the fact that you masturbate. I do not think, although we live in a culture where we're very quick to stigmatize porn or talk about it being addictive, it's really just a form of erotic stimuli. There's a lot of great ethical porn being made today. It's kind of like fair trade coffee. Like, you pay a little more. In this case, you pay a little more than free, and it's not much more.
Where can people find ethical porn? That sounds like, I mean, that is a lot of people's disturbance with porn, understandably so. And where can people find ethical porn? And where can people? And where can women? Because I hear a lot. Where can women find porn that is more consistent with what they want to watch? To be honest,
right? I think that's such a great question. You know, the thing again with ethical porn, in which, you know, the actors want to be there and there's consensuality and everybody's of age and you can feel good about it. What's amazing is that so much of it is being generated and directed by women, for women and for couples. You know, I think of, like, there's a porn director, Erica Lust, L-U-S-T. She has a site that's a great resource, and she's a mom and a porn director, and she has fellowships for up-and-coming females who want to make porn. Like, she's taking it. It's really an art form, you know? So you might start with someone like Erica Lust and, you know, and see where it leads you. There's a site that's called Balesa, which offers free porn, but it's free ethical porn. So if you want more of it, you will have to subscribe to get more. But a lot of that really caters to women as well. And, you know, what's great is a lot of the magazines like Women's Health and Cosmo, and they often have done articles about, like, the best erotic literature, the best new ethical porn. So they're really, it's not that far from finding, you're not that far away from finding out.
Dear Dr. Saltz, I'm a woman who has been sexually active for a few years, but I've never had an orgasm. I have tried with myself and partners without success. I wonder if part of the reason is the pressure that I put on myself. What advice do you have for someone who's never orgasmed?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you got to take that pressure off of yourself, because that just, you know, becomes a growing negative, you know, feedback loop. I mean, pressure is anxiety, and anxiety is the enemy of arousal. Anxiety shuts down arousal. So, you know, start enjoying your body, start enjoying giving yourself pleasure. Definitely take the focus off of orgasm. There are so many other ways to just have pleasure. Bring in that psychogenic stimulation. I think it's a little bit of a theme for me and a little bit of a theme today. Again, start generating the mind-based arousal, because that'll push out the pressure. That'll push out the anxiety if you get enough of that going. There are sites out there like omgs.com, which are very credible educational sites. That's a site that was designed specifically to help women learn how to masturbate and orgasm, and it features real women talking about what works for them and then actually showing the topics. So Debbie Herbenick, who we both know, did a lot of the research for it. So again, there are great resources, but you got to take the pressure off.
So one, you know, I often hear from women who struggle with this, and particularly because they think they should be able to orgasm with intercourse, which is harder for a lot of women, because you don't have as much direct clitoral stimulation. It's just harder for a lot of women. But women who have never and are really afraid that they're broken, do have a tremendous amount of anxiety and don't know that there are other women who have the same issue going on, and they're looking for, like, a tool. So when you say to them, you know, like, use fantasy. They're so anxious that they can't even think of something to fantasize about. So as you're saying, sort of books of erotica where you can borrow other women's fantasies. I used to prescribe, you know, the Nancy Friday books.
Sure.
And they're old, but they still, those fantasies are tried and true, and sort of borrowing other women's fantasies. And for some women who've never had an orgasm and don't have this sense of, like, I don't even know what I'm looking for, you know, like, I don't even know where I'm supposed to be going, using a vibrator, by yourself when there's no pressure and no one around can be really helpful. Do you have a favorite vibrator you recommend to women?
I mean, first of all, we're going through a renaissance in sex toys. It's like the golden age of sex toys. Go to Babeland, go on their website. There are so many beautifully designed products. I really love this company that's out of New York. It was started by two women who are young. It's called Dame Products. And they do tremendous research. One's like a marketer, strategist. The other's a very competent engineer, and they've developed two or three vibrators that have gone through thousands of iterations of development by being used by real women. So I would definitely start with Dame Products. They're one of my favorite companies.
That's a good tip. Women should even know that, frankly, some vibrators today are made, they're gorgeous. As you said, they look like they're like coffee table art pieces. Nobody will know what they are if you have them on your coffee table. But
and you know, they're not the most expensive accessory, but they're not the cheapest either. And so, you know, you go to somewhere like Dame Products and, you know, I think you're going to spend $50 to $75 to $100 maybe, but it's really worth it to get a quality product. And, you know, don't give yourself pressure. I mean, I love that idea of starting with like literary erotica and just read it. Don't even think about touching yourself, you know, just read it and enjoy it and let it percolate. And if there's a desire to touch or to be sensually stimulated, then let that happen, but let it come from an organic place.
We hope you thought that was helpful. This is really like a cornerstone of sex therapy. People often wonder, like, why would I see a sex therapist? And when would I see a sex therapist? And what's going to happen? Which people are very apprehensive about. But a real cornerstone is this idea of, you know, sort of a teasing apart, as you say, the sex script, and looking at it and seeing where one or the other is having difficulty specifically, which they both might not have even been aware of, and then tackling that specific problem. And often in sex therapy, one sort of treatment element, I guess, is a homework assignment, or, you know, this is a thing to try, not saying it will work for sure, but something along the way that might be helpful to you to try at home. And so you might assign a couple to go home and do some things. Could you give our listeners an idea of like a homework assignment that could potentially enhance their sexual experiences?
Sure. So that couple that I talked about, maybe who's come in and they get in bed and they just start having sex and they go pretty much straight to intercourse and they're not completely invested and one partner is not experiencing a lot of pleasure, let's say in a heterosexual arrangement, a heterosexual relationship, it's the female partner, right? So I want to give them a homework assignment that they can work on that's targeting those early stages of arousal and how do they get in sync together, right? Because they need a new arousal runway. They're just going sort of almost like straight to intercourse. So an arousal runway could consist of, you know, outer course activities and investing more in outer course activities. It could be about bringing in psychogenic stimulation, mind-based arousal. Maybe they can share a fantasy in a face-to-face kind of way, but more than likely, they're probably a little too shy for that. So maybe I'll have them like read some erotica aloud together or watch some ethical porn together where the actors, you know, really want to be there or listen to something. And so I'll give them an assignment to do this and I'll call it a willingness window because it's a window of time that you're allocating. You have to allocate the time. Couples always say, well, oh, it's homework. I just want it to be spontaneous. Well, we'll get to spontaneity. You wouldn't be here in my office if you could just do this spontaneously, right? That's like step five on the staircase. We're on step one. So you're going to allocate a window of time. And the thing that you're bringing is your willingness, because we've decided that this is important. I know that you're not going to show up wanting to do it. And even if one of you wants to do it, your partner may not want to do it. But you know what you both have is willingness. You may not have the desire yet, but you have the willingness. So if I can create this willingness window, and in that say, this isn't about sex, I don't even want you to go to sex. I'm looking to isolate an aspect of the sex script and to work on one behavior and see if it helps move us forward. So let's decouple this completely from sex, this assignment. Then they're going to go home and do it. And they're going to bring back some fascinating data about, you know, what happened and what didn't happen. And we'll be able to continue to iterate from there.
So you can really decrease a couple's anxiety in doing a homework assignment by basically saying you can't have intercourse. That's not the goal. And then there's not this apprehension like, okay, then we have to go there. And maybe, like you said, you say, hey, read this erotica together or out loud to each other, or you watch something that's stimulating. And as you said, maybe you add some elements of foreplay that they didn't typically do, but maybe they're going to try. And then you're just going to emotionally see where that leads them, what that does to desire, what that does to arousal. And as you said, then you plan the next homework assignment.
Right. And I should say something that's interesting is, you know, when you decouple it from sex, A, it relieves a lot of pressure, and you start to realize how much pressure certain sexual behaviors like intercourse might have. The other thing I really want to free people to do is sometimes I'll even say, make this the only sexual thing that you're actually doing, so that in all the space in between, you can bring back eroticism safely, especially if couples have been in like a negative cycle of like pursuing and avoidance. I really want them to find each other erotically outside of the bedroom and to be able to cultivate what I just call like a little erotic spark or charge. So sometimes we really need to take sex off the table for just the homework, and sometimes for like a period of time, so that they can rediscover their erotic selves.
That it's hard to find longing when it's omni there and even a pressure. And that part of erotica, right, is the feeling of like, oh, I want you. And I have a longing for you. But it's hard to feel that when you walk into the kitchen and see your partner, if you're like, if I make any move at all, I know what's going to happen. We'll have to go do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. I mean, we have to decouple eroticism and sexuality from the act of sex itself.
So when you say ritual, that's very important to create a ritual. Can you give us an example of a ritual?
Well, you know, I was just working with a couple, and this is, you know, it's pretty simple. Like, they're going to do a willingness window. I think they're actually going to do one around this foreplay and arousal concept. So that was the homework, and it's a new couple, and they weren't sure that they'd be able to get there because just life is going to get in the way, and they know that they're going to fight. So I also said, on the day that you're going to do that, I want you to wake up that morning, and I want you to know that this is at the top of the to-do list. It's going to come later tonight, but it's still at the top of the list. And I want you to organize and live your lives in a way in which you are privileging this sexual expression, right? So it starts to change in that one day, how they're treating each other, what they're eating, their approach to exercise, who the work they're bringing home, how they're using their iPhones, how they're communicating during the day, who they're talking to their parents or not talking to their parents on the phone, you know? So to me, that would be an example of a ritual, you know, an extended ritual, actually. One day a week, you know, you're actually really prioritizing the sex that's going to happen maybe at the end of the day, and, you know, spending that day. I'm not saying don't go about your daily business, but just keep this in mind as a priority.
Fabulous. Ian, thank you so much. Thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Gail.
Do you have a problem I can help with? If so, email me at howcanihelp@senecawomen.com. All senders remain anonymous. And listen every Friday to How Can I Help? With me, Dr. Gail Saltz.